Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We are broadcasting live from the Colgan Hall in Carndonagh. We're celebrating your voice, your community. It's part of International Women's Day within the Shone Development Partnership, and we've just come out actually into for those watching your show or watching the show, you'll see what's going on here. There's loads of stuff going on. In fact, they're just setting things up. The doors aren't officially open yet, and it's really quite as we talked about a little earlier on. We'll be speaking to responsible for that. I can see food. Oh my God, I'm hungry. And I can see some pop-up stands from the likes of the Inishon Development Partners, health communities and what have you. And a really big crowd here at the Colgan Hall. Sorry if I'm dropping out a little bit there. As I say, we've got loads of guests coming up, including some live music from the Ukrainian or a Ukrainian choir. Just some of your comments coming in here. Hi, good morning, Greg. Is it true that no men are allowed at Buncrana Garda Station coffee morning to facilitate women of certain cultural backgrounds? I normally take my elderly parents, but not sure what to do. I know it's International Women's Day, but men always could go to if they wanted to. Thanks. Unfortunately, that's a bit of false information that's been spread out there. We have double-checked just to be on the safe side. I presumed it was not true, and it is not true. That coffee day is open to all, and everyone's welcome and to go along there and have a cup of tea, have a cup of coffee, some treats, and support the supported on the day. Back to the rules of the road. The rules of the road states approaching a roundabout, the left lane is for the first and second exit off the roundabout unless road markings show otherwise, which further confuses the whole situation at the Tully Oil roundabout, for an example, because that means that we're all wrong. I don't know. Anyway, all right, it is the 9 till noon show, as I say. Stay right with us. Just to invite you to watch the show if you want to, you can do so. And Shannon, show our lovely viewers what we're seeing here. You can watch the show as well on X. We're on Highland Radio. We're on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. And we're on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport. Our next guest on the show joins us right now, and that's Patricia Higgins, one of the Connecting Communities officers with the Inishon Development Partnership. Patricia, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Greg.
It's good to have you on board. And you're relatively new into this position, aren't you? Just a little over a week. So
Bedding in, yes. I work part-time. So this is officially day 11 in the job. So I've been in at the deep end.
It sounds like you're marking the X's off on the calendar, but I'm sure it's much more enjoyable than that.
Well, this interview did make me start marking the X's, but yeah, no, it's great.
Well, listen, Patricia, as is always the case, once it's over, you'll be thinking, what was I concerned about, if you were concerned at all. Right, what is your role then, Patricia?
Okay, so myself and my colleague Maggie, we both work part-time with the Inishon Development Partnership. And I guess the role has a number of functions. One is to support new communities within Inishon. And at the moment, there's a focus on the people who've come seeking international protection, who are all within Inishon. They're based in Buncrana. And then apart from that, it's to support integration. So looking at how the locals within Inishon connect and creating spaces and opportunities for people to connect with people from new communities.
Is that a bit of a challenge? Because, you know, I think I have to choose my words carefully because I'm only kind of really going by from what I see. But it seems that, you know, somewhere like Buncrana, if you look at the rest of Donegal, there seems to be more polarized views on new members of the community.
I think that those who have the strong anti-views shout loud. I know there's enormous good work and goodwill going on, not just in Buncrana, but across the peninsula. I've been involved in some of it in an individual capacity myself, where I come from over in Moville. I know the Exchange, for example, in Buncrana and Buncrana for All have been doing a power of work to welcome people. And I know that there are instances of that across, not instances, there's evidence of that, an ongoing welcoming work going on all across the peninsula. In Malin, in Newton Cunningham, I'm going to forget some places now. But
no, I get you, yeah.
So I guess part of our role is to support that and sustain that and to allow people who want to offer a welcome, mm-hmm. to give them opportunities to do that. It can be hard, as I was telling your researcher yesterday, I grew up in a town in the north which was Catholic and Protestant, and we never met, never ever. Mm. So
a lot of this isn't new to us.
So, well, we're very, I guess it's really important to create the spaces where people who are coming from different backgrounds get a chance to meet and connect and realise the connections that they have between each other.
So do you think sometimes the anti-immigration, if I can call it that, opinion is amplified, over-amplified? Maybe it's over-represented in the public discourse?
Well,
I'm going back to the comment you says that sometimes, you know, those are the voices that shout loudest.
I think it can be hard. They're a very strong voice. It can be hard to stand up against them. And I think that it's important to... sorry, you asked me, do they get
over-amplified? You know,
I think they're really savvy. Yeah, and I think they may have... resources.
And I suppose really to simplify, that because I kind of painted you into quite a complex corner there, is that really maybe, you know, the majority are more welcoming?
Yes, but I think for people to, I guess what I'm saying when I draw on my experience from the North is if you don't have the opportunities to connect and meet and realize what you have in common with people, then the voices that tell you that those differences are significant can gain traction. And suppose that there's a lot of work going on to create those spaces already in Inishowen and across Donegal and beyond. And I guess my role and Maggie's role is to support that, and where there are gaps to try and find.
And when you look over the balcony here, you see people of, you know, so many different backgrounds, you know, mixing and milling around and getting to know each other, if they don't know each other already. So what is the IPASS experience like? You know, what do you hear from these people?
Okay, so IPASS, for those who aren't familiar with the term, is International Protection Accommodation Service. It has replaced direct provision. So people come, and where previously they would have stayed in Dublin and had a range of supports for a period of up to perhaps 6 weeks or 2 months, now they're being, because of the demands on the system, they're being put straight to into centres around the country. They're managed by local people. And we're very lucky in Muncrana. The managers in the two IPASS centres are very proactive in terms of doing the basic stuff for the people who arrive, getting PPS numbers and getting kids into school. They're very on the ball around that. So the experience then is people come, they submit their application for international protection, which is a claim that they have a well-founded fear of harm were they to return to their country of origin. So that's the basis on which they can come here and seek asylum.
Do you have any sense, not official figures, as to how many, like, are you dealing with, or have your colleagues dealt with many people that have had their applications rejected?
My understanding, I have colleagues who work in this in Dublin, I have friends who work in this area in Dublin. So I have a figure of, I believe that if you're from what's now deemed a safe country, you have only a 10% chance of having your application accepted. And I understand that the figure is you have somewhere around 40 to 50% chance of getting your application.
Yeah. And of course, the safe countries list has been expanded.
It has indeed, yes.
Quite recently. So what are, and then obviously once the IPASS applicants have been here for a certain amount of time, they are entitled to work, aren't they?
Yes. And,
there is also a difference between the state support for IPASS applicants versus, say, for instance, Ukrainian refugees.
Yes, I understand that the conditions for the Ukrainian incoming Ukrainian beneficiaries of temporary protection, that has changed and is now more aligned.
Yes.
I don't fully know the details of that, but I do know that, yes, compared to what the original Ukrainian beneficiaries of temporary protection were receiving, which is more in line with Irish social welfare.
Exactly, yeah. And that's in the news again today. It is a complex and ever-moving situation. So what kind of supports are you offering the people that you work with, asylum seekers?
Well, I guess we our key role is to signpost, because already it's not to duplicate. We're not offering specific asylum seekers. Many of them, as you say, once they get their work permits, they want access to training and employment. So we're signposting them to my colleagues, say, in the Initial and Development Partnership. We have an extensive employment support team, so they would be, we'd be signposting them there. We'd be the signposting them to ETB English classes and other very, there's a variety, a whole variety of English classes being offered on various bases around the peninsula. We'd also, I guess, we just completed a funding application yesterday to the government department that oversees integration. And in it, we were asking for something that would be specific to asylum seekers, in recognition of the fact that many of them, 10 to 15% of them, will have been victims of torture, and many more of them will have suffered trauma. So trying to do trauma-informed wellness opportunities for them to offer psychotherapy, counselling, that would be tailored to their particular needs.
And just going back to the importance of integration, and there are a few initiatives, this is amongst them, the Coffee Hub as well?
The Cafe Hub, yes. Yeah. In
sorry, I'm a wee bit common. Sorry, the Cafe Hub.
No, I thought you said Coffee Hub.
But I did, that's exactly what I said.
The Cafe, okay.
But I meant the Cafe Hub.
Yeah, I'm a tea person, so I get defensive about it.
I'm a coffee person, but there's no coffee here.
So that's what you're looking for at the door.
No! Are you trying to throw me under the bus, Patricia? We were friends.
Certainly not.
Cafe Hub.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. I get defensive with tea.
I'm defensive as well.
Yes.
We shall organise a duel.
Excellent. I'm one of those tea drinkers who gets peeved when there's no biscuit with the...
You're one of them.
I'm one of them.
What were we talking about? We're talking about the importance of integration, understanding each other, and breaking down barriers, isn't it? Misconceptions.
Yeah, and being able to. I took two of the women who have cooked today. You asked me how we support the women, giving them opportunities to use their talents, giving them opportunities to solve what they need to address their needs is a huge part of how we're meant to approach the work. But so we had 10 volunteers who have cooked for us today. I went shopping with them in Letterkenny to find the stuff that you can't get in Irish supermarkets. It was like walking into an Aladdin's den. Mm. All of this stuff that I'd, some of which herbs at rock bottom prices, but then other ingredients I've never heard of in my life.
Yeah.
So it was fascinating.
Spices
to spend.
And
yes,
stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. And fascinating to be with two Nigerian women as they work their way around the shop. So for me, that's very enriching to be in a place I've never been before and to do it in the safety and company of two women who kind of shepherded me within it.
Yeah.
So that's just a small example of the power of integration. I had a chat with another man who studied the same as me in college. He studied in Saudi. And years ago, I had met someone from Syria, and we had discovered that the word for jumper in Arabic is very like the word for jumper in Irish, gansy. So I stand to be corrected on that, but I had the opportunity to ask this gentleman who studied economics in Saudi. I said, tell me now, what is the word in Arabic for? So I love that, you know, that you come away with a sense of, wow, I wonder what's behind that linguistic connectivity.
What do the asylum seekers so say to you? Do you know what I mean about what it's like here? Do they feel safe and secure? Are they aware of what appears to be sort of a growing resistance to them being here, that being labelled as, you know, single military-aged males or what have you? You know, and people have their views, and I respect that. But is there an awareness of that, or are they more familiar with the welcome side of things?
There are two groups because of the two centres. So in one group, I've been here for a year, mostly. Another group have only been here for a couple of months because the centre, people might know it in Moncona as the old HSE. It has been only open since December. So those who have been here for a short time, some of them are very positive about their experiences, really positive, have only had positive experiences. Unfortunately, those who have been here for longer have had experiences of racism and Not many, but I am hearing, and there has been research done on this locally by some of the community groups. The Exchange, for example, did something on racism and inclusion last year and found evidence of it. And sadly, anecdotally, that has increased since the IPASS centres have opened.
Yeah, and of course we have seen arson attacks attempts here, which is obviously going to, people are going to be aware of.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. We've a lot of working through to do in this country. I'm kind of an observer, if you know what I mean, wondering where we're going and how we're going to get there. But that's, you know, you have a role to play in that as well, I suppose.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's really important. I have colleagues in the Initial Development Partnership who work on change makers. So they speak about development issues and understanding global issues and the local impact of those. And I think that asylum seekers are really at the cutting edge of that, international protection applicants, because of climate change, because of moving global forces. People do have to seek asylum, and that's a reality of our increasingly globalised world. And so their work helps give me a context for the work that I do.
Okay. Margaret Duffy on Facebook says, hello, Patricia. Very good, informative interview. Well done.
Margaret is a colleague at the Cafe Hub in Mobile.
The Cafe Hub. Okay, listen. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's been lovely chatting to you, Patricia.
Lovely.
Hopefully it wasn't as
too
bad as you anticipated as
Not
you
at
marked
all.
Those X's off.
Indeed. Greg, thank you very much.
Thanks, Patricia. That's Patricia Higgins, one of the Connecting Community Officers with the Inishowen Development Partnership. And we're speaking to Patricia in the context of our visit here to the Colgan Hall in Carndonagh, celebrating Your Voice, Your Community. It's part of International Women's Day with Inishowen Development Partnership and, of course, the Inishowen Co-op. We've got so much more for you on this special programme coming up. Keep your texts and calls coming into us, please, if you don't mind. You can WhatsApp or text us on 086 6025000 or give us a call on 074 91 25000, on any issue you wish, or if you have any interaction which you wish to partake in as part of the conversations we're having. I'm joined on the programme now by Fatima Mohammed Hassan, and I'm really pleased to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, welcome.
How long have you been in Ireland now?
Yeah, I have been nearly 4 months.
And how has your experience been?
You say that?
How have you settled into life in Ireland?
Yeah, the life of Ireland is very good. In fact, it's very attractive. Yeah.
Okay. Talk to me about your life in southern Somalia. What was life like there for you?
First of all, my name is Fatima Mohammed Hassan. I'm a Somali girl from Somalia, especially a town called Balad Hawa town in southwestern Somalia. My country, Somalia, has gone through decades of civil war. Currently, Somalia is divided into two areas that under the control of the Somali government and the area where the Al-Shabaab terrorist organization rule. My country's population is over 17 million people, more than half of them being women and girls. Women in my country play a crucial role in all areas of life. There is also what's called GBV, gender-based violence, and harmful practice such as FGM that specifically concern about women.
And how is that widespread? When you talk of gender-based violence, is that the experience of every woman in Somalia, or what women are the victims of that, or is it all women?
Yeah, always women are the victim of these things, because Somali women always use and practices these harmful things, FGM, that's a female genital mutilation. Yeah.
And this happens often when women are very young.
Yeah, very young, when they are very young, yeah. That's the time they practice.
Yeah, and but women have a very important role in Somalian society.
Yes, women as a backbone of Somali society are the one who always work for the family, A good example of a strong and a hardworking woman is my mother, Khadija. My mother, she tried her best to make sure to go her children to school in order to succeed in life. She did her best to educate them, and she succeeded in her life. In fact, I love my mother and I missed her. I celebrate her dedication all time, and especially a day like this.
You talk about a civil war, which means obviously primarily, you know, men fighting or men absent from the home, which puts more pressure on the mother to care for a family, to look after them, to provide for them, ensure their education.
Yeah, you know, the women, as I said, my country experienced a civil war. That time, the men were busy fighting against each other. Women are the ones who bring the basic needs for the family.
Why did you decide to leave Somalia and move to Ireland?
You know, in Somalia, I have a good life there. I was since I'm educated, I was working there, but there's a problem that made me here to come,
Did you feel unsafe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel safe here. Because,
okay.
Yeah.
And you have your children with you?
Yeah, I have children. I have six children. Four of them are with me now. Another two, plus my mom, plus my younger sister that I raised her, I left in Somalia.
Do you hope that they could join you here?
In fact, I miss them. In fact, I left them. Today, you know, a day like this, International Day, we always celebrate together, always to remember the role of my mom, my younger sister. That's our last born of our family. The one I raised her in my house. We always celebrate. Last night, we cried to each other.
Yeah.
That means we are not together, but I'm expecting one time to be together, to be socialized the way we use, to be celebrate the next International Day together.
Do you expect that to be here?
Yeah,
but in other words, you don't intend to return to Somalia because you don't feel safe.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, Somalia, it's not safe.
As you mentioned, you know, you're well educated and you were working in Somalia. Are you able to work here? Do you want to work here, or you're raising your family? What's your situation here?
Yes, I want to work here, and I want to learn. For example, I am a social worker and a community development there. And now my hope is one day to become a nurse. I want to learn a nurse now, mm-hmm. since I'm getting opportunity here.
How is life for your children in Irish schools? I'm not sure, can they speak English? Are they learning English? Is it difficult for them?
In fact, my children, they are English speakers, children.
Better than yours,
yeah,
even, perhaps.
Because
and yours
their
is
mom
excellent.
And their father, they are educated. We always use in English in our house. In fact, it's good to see my children today, how they talk to you. It is very wonderful. Even the schools are satisfied with them, how they behave, how they learn, how they understand everything. More than children, I can say.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the event today is just getting underway. Is it interesting for you to meet women of different backgrounds, to get together with other women on International Women's Day? I would say particularly as you miss your mother, who you speak so highly of.
In fact, it is very interesting to meet with these all different people, different face of different women. It is happiest for me today to meet with them, since International Women's Day is a woman is a day of interaction. It is a day of socialization. It is a day of learning each other and learning new faces. So it is very good for me to be part of with them.
Do you? I hope the answer is yes. But do you feel happy and safe walking around Ireland?
Yeah, in fact. I feel happy and safe. You know, the people of here is open-hearted, loving, welcoming. They have all good things that someone have.
Okay, well, it's been lovely speaking to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you want to say, or are you happy enough?
Yeah, no, it's I'm okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Although, you've done enough.
Yeah, although I miss my parents and my people and there, you know.
Of course.
Yeah, still I have people here who always welcoming me, always with me. I don't have enough.
Well, that's what I was saying. I think particularly today, as you miss your mother, it's nice to be around other people when we feel lonely, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't replace them, but it makes you feel a bit. Listen, thank you so very much for joining us. It's been lovely having you on the program.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, that was Fatima Mohamed Hassan, who is from southern Somalia, and I was just talking about her experience of International Women's Day in Somalia, and of course her experience celebrating International Women's Day here. This is the 9 till noon show, live from the Colgan Hall in beautiful Carndonagh. Just to remind those just tuning in, we're celebrating Your Voice, Your Community. It's part of International Women's Day with Inishowen Development Partnership and the Inishowen Co-op. We have two guests in studio with us now in our makeshift studio, although it's quite nice. Laura Campbell, who is a young farmer. Hi, Laura.
How are we getting on?
How long do you think you can call yourself a young farmer for?
Hopefully another couple of years anyways.
Okay. And also we've got Jane Gamble, who is a farmer as well. Hi, Jane.
How are you, Greg?
It's great to have you with us. Jane, I'll start with you, if that's okay. How long have you been farming?
For a long, long time. We started in 19... Well, I was born on a farm. Mm. So I always knew a wee bit about farming, a small farm. But then we started milking cows in 1976, I think it was. And we milked 20 cows by hand, myself and my husband, the first year. Then we got a milking machine. So basically that's... When we started, we went up to about 75 cows, but then we delivered our milk door to door, so we were very, very busy.
Yeah, those were, I would say, particularly doing it manually. I remember seeing that myself, yes. And it's, I was going to say, it's labour intensive. It's certainly time in time intensive. I would can only imagine what it was like when the mechanical milker landed on scene. It must have been just the excitement and relief.
It was a great buzz, and when we delivered the milk in bottles. Pint bottles at that time, all around our neighbours and the local area, and our customers were all wonderful. We got a great buzz out of being at everybody's door every day, 365 days a year.
And you worked always on the family farm, did you?
Yes.
And did you then take it over, or?
No, my husband died 20 years ago, so we continued on for another wee while, myself and my son and daughter, Robin and Maureen. And then 7 years ago, we retired.
Mm-hmm.
Old age and things like that.
Well, now, come here. You just wanted
we did enjoy it.
It's
we really,
something
like
old
really,
age.
Really.
You wanted a different lifestyle.
Enjoying it.
Sure, you can still be at it. But a tough... And was that sort of the whole family retired from farming?
Yes,
then?
The whole lot
but
of
I would
it.
Say that was a tough decision too, because I would say a lot of it you keep going in your husband's memory and sort of, you know, you hope to kick it on another generation, but it obviously wasn't just the direction.
No.
But it was a tough call, was it?
It kind of was, but my son wasn't interested in the responsibility of running a farm at all, so why should he then?
And were you glad for him, or...?
You know, I was happy enough that he... Like, there's no point in somebody farming if you're not happy with it. So, you know, we have leased it now.
Yeah.
But we did enjoy it when we were busy, and being young was a big help.
Yeah.
And we were never too busy to enjoy badminton and bowls in the winter... and tennis in the summer, and that would be my advice to any farmer nowadays. Some of them work very hard, too hard, and life's short.
Yeah.
And working too hard and not having time for your family is a big no-no.
Yeah, and I think it's certainly a case in farming, not specific to farming. I think that's probably good advice for lots of people, that sometimes, you know, we focus so much on our work, and next thing you know...
Yeah, boom.
Next thing you know, boom.
At my age, I've been to a lot of graveyards lately. Yeah. And mind you, it's very quiet in there.
Yeah.
There's no buzz.
Yeah, exactly.
So I like to enjoy, I think we should enjoy life when they can. A nice mixture of work and play.
Get the life balance right. And you did that, as you say, with the...
We did that, and I'm glad we did that, because my husband was dead at 69 years of age.
Yeah, too young. Yeah. Are you surprised... what do you see as the future of farming? And the future of farming is probably sitting to your right, and we're going to speak to Laura in a moment. But do you think there is a strong future for farming?
I think there is, and I think the women today will make a very good job of what they do. I think they will.
Laura Campbell... you grew up on the farm as well. Your story actually really quite similar to Jane's, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I was born on a farm. I would have spent a lot of time farming with my grandparents when my mum and dad was at work. So I kind of just developed a love for it.
And were you sort of, when you landed there, it was like, right, what are we doing today?
Yeah, basically just falling around in my wee pink welly boots.
Yeah, exactly. And I see those young people in my family as well. So you got the bug early on.
Yeah.
Right.
Never got rid of it.
So then there comes a time, though, when it's not, you know, sort of it's time for the grandparents and the parents and stuff. But then it's like, well, you know, you start looking at what you're doing at school and thinking, could this be a career for me? Like, how early do you think that you thought that you would have a career as a farmer?
Probably since secondary school, even doing ag science in Cairn School there, it was always probably one of my favourite subjects. And then I decided then very early on in secondary school that I was going to go on and do agriculture in college. I went up to LYIT for 4 years and got first class honours in agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, then I started in the co-op. I've been there now for 2.5 years, around that.
And what does the ag science sort of bring to farming? Do you know what I mean from your perspective? How do you sort of bring your education into the practice side of things?
You just seem to have a better idea of what's happening and why it's happening. So like grass is down to soil fertility and stuff like that there. It just gives you a better idea, whereas before you would have just looked maybe at a field and thought that grass isn't growing as well as it should be, and then you're kind of more into the scientific end of things, and you look at it probably more like a business as well in a certain way, through different modules on business management and stuff like that there.
And just as Jane was talking there, and it was sound advice about having that work-life balance, you've already really established that that's the if this is your future, you have to have your life outside of farming as well. So is that when you talk about treating it as a business, is that sort of how you then try and make some time for yourself as well?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's important to make time for yourself. There is times, busier times, lambing and stuff, where you will have to cut back, but then you will get other times where it's quieter maybe, and you can go on your nights out and stuff like that there. But there's plenty of nights I went up to feed sheep and have makeup and all on. So
Jane, did you ever full face of makeup feeding milking the cows? No.
Oh no. I don't think makeup was invented then.
Come here. No, I know what you're saying though. So, and Laura, they say, you know, if you enjoy what you do, you never work a day in your life, don't they? It's a tough old slog, but you love what you do, don't you?
Yeah. No, it's definitely important to love it, because especially wintertime, dark evenings and dark mornings, and it's wet. You just don't want to be going and feeding and doing whatever. But if you do love it, it does encourage you to get up and keep going.
I just wonder, with your ag science background and what have you, and maybe your approach to farming, how do you see this whole sort of farming versus climate change, climate crisis debate? Like, are you of the mindset that maybe farmers are being asked to do too much heavy lifting, or do you look at the science and say, look, there are ways, and we are doing things in a different way that's more environmentally friendly? How does that sit with you, that whole conversation?
I think probably I'm probably 50-50. I think there is some things, maybe and certain things that farmers can improve on. But again, it's not just down to farmers in certain cases. You know, like, they can improve on fertilizer and water quality and stuff like that. There can be something that farmers can directly improve on, but there's a lot of indirect things that...
You know, and I think even something as simple as water quality, I think if a farmer, it has to be demonstrated to them that something is their fault. Or we saw down in the southwest of the country, whereby farming practices changed, pollution reduced, but the nitrates directive still changed. And, you know, I think if you're in the industry, you're going, well, you know, we're trying our best here. Can you reward us for what we're doing? Because compared to a lot of places, you know, we are farming more sustainable than most. You know, you need to be rewarded for the efforts that you make, don't you? Or you need to feel that that's happening.
Yeah, no, exactly. There's no point doing all these different measures and following all the rules and then you're still getting penalised at the end. It's unencouraging, so it is.
So you stroll into the co-op in Carn, right?
Mm-hmm.
First time. Confident swagger and all that kind of stuff. Mostly fellas.
Yeah.
Do you have to win over the respect of them?
Not really. Most of the men in the co-op there, they're all very, very encouraging.
But you have to prove your knowledge, sort of a thing. Is there a bit of that? I don't think that's even gender related. I think if I walked in there, I'd think, oh, what's going on here? Until you sort of proved you knew what you were talking about.
People would definitely be more wary, I would say, customers and stuff coming in. And even if it was a male or a female, a new face is always, you're like, what do they know? And do you know, different kind of things. But once you've been in for a wee while, everyone kind of comes to the same.
Of course. What I asked Jane about the future of farming, do you worry that you're the last generation of farmers?
Not really. Okay. I see a lot of young girls, young boys seem to become more and more interested in farming. I think social media has played a big part in it.
Yeah.
TikTok and stuff like that. It's like farming's becoming more of a trend.
Are you on TikTok?
No, well, I don't make farming TikToks.
Why not?
Probably should start.
I think you'd be doing well. Yeah, indeed. Okay. And you do sheep farming.
Yeah.
Suckler cows and horses as well.
Yeah.
And is the horses also, is that a business side of things or is that a bit of the leisure side of things?
A bit of both. We have Connemara mares that we use for breeding. We have been breeding now in a couple of years. And then I have an ex-race horse as well for...
Okay.
Just to get out and about in the evenings time and the good weather and stuff like that.
Did it win anything?
No, never won anything, so I didn't.
Was it all cows with you, Jane, or what was the story?
All cows.
All cows.
Dairy cows, just that was all.
That was the thing, all right.
And
okay.
Milk. And milk.
And milk. And we're going to be speaking to a lady later on, makes butter. That's you?
That's me too, yes.
Well, that's not on my notes. Tell me about the butter. You're still making butter?
Yes, it's not a business, but I just do it
for... Is that the glass thing that you churn it there, right? Talk to me about making butter, Jane. You dropped this bombshell very late.
It's very simple, actually. Fresh cream. You can make it out of fresh cream,
yes.
Or you can make it from cream that you sour. It takes about 4 or 5 days to get it nice and sour. And then whenever you make the butter, what's left behind is buttermilk, which is used in yogurt making or in bread making.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can drink it.
Yes.
But what I've done today is just I'm using fresh cream and you just put some water, clean cold water in through it and churn it and there's your butter. Rinse it and put a bit of salt in it.
That's exactly what I was going to ask about you because a lot of the I love butter.
Yes,
You know, like I have toast with my butter. Do you know that?
Well,
sort of
I'll
thing?
Give you a sample this evening to take home with you.
Well, don't make promises you won't keep. Okay.
Have some already.
Put a bit of extra salt in mine. Will you say nothing?
Yeah, I do that for the have some there now.
Okay, looking forward to going down and seeing that. Actually,
okay.
All jokes aside, I'll have it as you would recommend it. Okay, and you do that, but it's doable. Lots of people, anyone can make butter.
Anybody can make butter. Very, very simple to make.
All right.
Very simple.
Good stuff. What do you, when you see Laura sort of at the start of her career, Jane, and you've got so many stories when you with your hubby and then after your hubby that you could talk about too, do you go, oh, get out of it now, or do you go, well, fair play, do you enjoy your life?
I would like to think she would enjoy it as much as we did, but then that was a different time.
Mm.
When all this paperwork and regulations came along, it kind of took the edge off.
How do you deal with the paperwork side of it, Laura? Is that, the business approach? Because the paperwork kind of was dumped on Jane's family. It became a thing and it got worse. Then it was papers, then it was computers. But you sort of, I suppose you came into the industry when that was established. So is it tough applying for everything and dotting the T's and crossing the I's or the other way around?
Yeah, no, it is definitely tough, but I have a lot of help as well. Our farm advisor and my mother would help a lot with paperwork and stuff like that, so I'm not my own doing it, which is good.
Okay. Now, so when you go feeding the sheep with full makeup on, right, Paula wants to know, is that before you're going out or on your way home after going out?
Before, usually. I don't know if I'd be fit on the way home.
I don't know what that means. All right, brilliant stuff. Listen, it's been wonderful speaking to both of you. Jane, looking forward to sampling your butter. Yeah. Thank you very much indeed, Jane Gamble. Do you still play the bowls, or did you give that up? Or
not really. We just haven't since COVID. It's sort of slid away.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
Okay, but we'll get back.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get back. That's the thing. So, Jane Gamble, thank you very much for joining us. It's been lovely speaking to you. And Laura Campbell, lovely chatting to you too. I think the future's bright, isn't it, Jane?
In
Laura's
think
hands.
So, yes.
Okay. And we wish you continued success with everything that you're doing in the industry. Okay. Thank you both of you very much indeed. Just to recap, that's Laura Campbell, a female farmer, and Jane Gamble, also a female farmer, but retired now. Okay. Tune to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Just a reminder for you that you can give us a WhatsApp or text on 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or call us on 074 91 25000. Coming in the next hour, we've got loads of guests, including some live music for you. After listening to the woman from Somalia, I think we should be taking more into the country, says a listener. Another, hi Greg, do you or your listeners know if the €100 emergency department charge has been done away with? Thanks, great show. Let me check that out for you, because there's a €100 charge, and I think my recollection is a €100 charge and then a €50 charge with a referral letter from the GP. But anyway, I don't want to mislead you or give you wrong information, so we'll check that out and I will get back to you. Right, let us take a break. We're going to be back with the news after these.